This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting from Pod Bay 2A, a mile above sea level at Intergalactic Prairie Studios. We alter your locus coeruleus by warming your synapses with rejuvenative radio waves. This warms your brain to a tasty and toasty 365 degrees Fahrenheit to keep a sin flood of statism out of your head. Can you feel it? Is it working, Diana and Michael? Can you feel it?
I got my footy pajamas on. I am so ready.
Yeah, I'm just Googling. I'm Googling he who cannot be named to find out this rumor is true about that he had a sealed juvie record that involved cat strangling and arson. But I don't know. You never know what you hear on the internet these days.
And also, the Freedom Fiends and Diana's pajamas are covered by a BIPCOD no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at bipcot.org.
Hey, baby, what you wearing?
pictures of reusing Diana's pajamas.
Trigger warning. Come on, post a picture.
They have to have footies in them.
Footies.
Footy pajamas.
Footies.
Oh, my God. It sounds like my hippies. Jason and Mary.
The polka dots, too. It's actually the only pink thing that I ever wear.
Lou owns hippies.
I don't own them. They
just—they're BIPCOD licensed.
They're kind of like free-range pets. You know, they come and go as they please.
Yeah. How do you know when someone's a hippie's there for dinner?
Because they're still there at breakfast.
Yep.
And with my hippies, they've cleaned up and they've done some sort of weird decorating, which may involve going and getting a lawn-looking carpet and putting it on the campsite with spray paint on it.
They're kind of the reverse BIPCOD because they don't allow governments to necessarily reuse their art, but they take government property and repurpose it into art.
Unowned property.
Yeah, unowned property.
So it is available for homesteading.
So I'm going to be on for like 8 more seconds and I'll let you guys go, but we were talking before the show started about movies with car chases in San Francisco, and I was saying how there's this movie called, I think it's The Owl and the Pussycat, with like Ryan O'Neal and Barbara Streisand, and they're having a bicycle chase through Chinatown, and they end up with one of those Chinese paper dragons trailing behind one of the bikes, and they go down this alley, Dashiell Hammett Alley, and they run into a building that I later lived in. They run into my house. They run into 639 Bush Street, And what did you say about broken windows and improving the economy, Lou?
Oh, when Barbara breaks your windows, that's the Streisand effect.
All right, have a good show. I might stop in later. Have a good slumber party, you cats. Meow.
Well, thank you very much, and meow meow to you, too. Yeah.
I'm the CEO of the Fiends. I just make sure it happens, and then I get off. All right, here. Where do you get off?
CAO.
Yeah.
CAO, Chief Anarchy Officer. Yep. So Diana, about these pajamas. Okay, they're pink. They got footies. They got polka dots.
Yeah.
So you're like,
it's the most comfortable thing you could ever put on your person. It's like, okay, seriously, so I just put them on and I start laughing because it's just insane. They're so comfortable.
Okay, so you're 3 for 4 with my hippies. Do you have the escape hatch in the backside?
No.
Okay, well, that's the part that sucks,
because, you know, if you have to go to the washroom, then it's, like, really, really cold until you get them back on again. That's a flaw in the pajamas.
Yeah. Well, my hippies wear the, you know, the onesies, I think they're called, and they get, I don't know if Jason wears the pink ones, but I think they got, like, some giraffe skin, styled, design, pajamas, so.
I almost got one. It was so cute, but it was just, I'm not big on shopping, and the store was so full of people, there was no way I was going to line up to buy it. Like, it was, because it was Christmas time and everything, but I still have that sharp in my mind that there is a better, you know, footy pajama out there, and I must find it again when it's not Christmas time, and I can actually tolerate being there. I don't like places with lots of people in them all at the same time.
No, I agree with you, especially shopping, because that's where like the hunter-gatherer instinct comes out, and people just get all crazy and violent and psychopathic. No,
I've gone through Walmart before and filled up a shopping cart, and then I looked at the lineup, and I just left the shopping cart there. Because, you know, in a way, too, I'm not really a consumer. So the amount of time I have stuff in my shopping cart, that's about as long as I need to own it for. And I'm good.
Okay. Well, helpful hint for everybody today is if you're in Walmart and the checkout lines are all jammed up, go to the pharmacy, go to sporting goods, go to electronics. Now, they won't be able to weigh out your vegetables if it's like broccoli or something like that, but you could get by with just about anything else. See, that's news you can use from the Freedom Fiends.
True enough. You know, there was one Christmas I went to Walmart at like midnight because I was having like, you know, unexpected guests coming over. And I thought, okay, well, I'll just go to Walmart. But I'll go when there's going to be nobody there and I'll pick up all the stuff I'm going to need. And there was a woman wandering around with her shopping cart. And she said, I've been here since 8 o'clock this morning. And she was totally lost. Like she couldn't even remember what she was looking for. It was insane. It was like, that's what you find when you go to large box store shopping places. These crazy consumer people who showed up in the morning and they're still there at midnight and they can't remember why.
I don't know how to put this, but I really think there's some other underlying issue. It's just me. I
can't really hear you. We're cutting out. I'm going to just talk because I can't hear you, so I'm presuming that you're gone here. But yeah, watch out for consumerism. They like to trick you into doing things like going to Walmart. And right, so what else were we talking about earlier? I was telling you this week I became obsessed with lie spotting. So I was looking up this thing and came across a video by a woman named Pamela Meyer. And she was she has this thing, you can find it on YouTube, How to Spot a Lie. It was a really great TED Talk, actually. And so she was going through, first of all, that, you know, the person sitting to your right and the person sitting to your left, you know, they're both liars. And in fact, the person sitting in your chair, they're a liar. And then starts going through, you know, the problems that we face in our society when you're just surrounded by lies all the time. You kind of feel blindfolded. She had a really good visual. But then she gets into not just how to spot a lie, but what you can do if you become good at it in terms of bettering society, not just being a gotcha kind of person going, haha, nobody can lie to me. Although after watching this, I got like obsessed with lie spotting to the point of, you know, I just wanted to like walk around and see if I could spot liars everywhere, right? So I'm kind of like that when I get into studying something. And then it's just like everything I look at and see it has to do with that topic. So Pamela Meyer's video, she has some amazing footage in there of she compares two people. There's like a mother who is faking that she had her children murdered, and then another woman who really did, and compares the two reactions. And the footage of their faces is just crazy amazing. And there's this thing that they have a term for, duping delight. And she shows the footage of this woman, Diane Downs, I think her name was, talking about having her children in the backseat of her car. She claims they were shot by a stranger and that she had to drive them to the hospital while they were bleeding. And she's like, I'll never forget, you know, what that looked like. And then she has this crazy smile after describing this horrific event. It's so creepy to watch. And then she shows, you know, the footage of a woman who actually did have her children murdered and her statement to the guy who was caught for killing them. But after watching footage of these faces, it's like, it's amazing how much stuff people, like if you see it the first time without knowing what to look for, that you wouldn't catch it. And then lots of little things, like somebody saying something as a positive statement, but they shake their head and that's their tell that they're not telling the truth. So anyways, I've watched a few videos now and I think I'm a professional lie spotter.
Well, I just got back and I missed most of what you said. And, you may have said this already, but most communication is actually nonverbal. It is the facial gestures, the hand movements, the fidgeting, facial expressions. also not necessarily spoken, but how it's spoken would be the voice intonation, inflection, things like that, choice of words even.
Yeah. Well, you definitely, not only do you have to be watching them, but they make this point when you look at like the professionals trying to teach people that you need a baseline too. So they were talking about Richard Nixon at one point and saying he was probably the most awkward man in the universe. So his mannerisms may look really suspicious, but if you look at his baseline, he actually is just extremely awkward. So,
so being a mess actually helps.
But I know. I mean, for the original thing was that it was so exciting, this idea of just going out and trying to, like, you know, study people and become an expert lie spotter. But then you think about it, too. Like, how would the world change if you couldn't get away with lying to anyone? Right?
That'd be a good question.
Relationships between men and women, for one. Politicians.
Well, have you seen the movie called The Invention of Lying with Ricky Gervais?
No, I love Ricky Gervais, so I'm sure it's awesome.
I haven't seen it either. What is it called? The Invention of Lying, I think it's called.
Okay.
But anyway, I haven't seen it yet, but the gist of it is it's a society where absolutely nobody can lie, so everybody's just blatantly, brutally honest, and nobody gets butthurt over it because, I mean, it's just everybody's honest. It's what's expected. So eventually he learns how to start telling lies. You know, it's like discovering fire for the first time, and he comes up with a secret, and he starts telling lies so he can score with women and all sorts of silly things. But the preview looks pretty interesting.
We all like to think that we're really good at detecting lies, you know, and there's all these sayings like, oh, it's in the eyes, you know, the eyes are the window to the soul and stuff. But you know, when you watch these, it's actually the eyes aren't so much important. It's micro expressions and body language.
All right, so more micro expressions, no micro aggressions when we come back from this trip to the market. Worms!
Listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
Are you tired of your taxes funding endless occupations around the world? Antiwar.com is run by people who understand that wars abroad become wars at home, wars on our freedoms. Antiwar.com is dedicated to bringing you the latest in news, views, interviews, and reviews from the top movers and shakers in the anti-occupation movement. Antiwar.com has it all, from thorough foreign policy analysis to interviews with whistleblowers who used to run the military-industrial complex. Antiwar, pro-free market. That's antiwar.com.
Woof, woof.
That was like the most mournful cat sound ever, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Well, that cat's been to the veterinarian a lot. Yeah. So, yeah. And this is a teaching hospice. So, anyway. So, yeah. How to spot a liar. And I missed most of what you said because one of my computers locked up and I wound up having to switch computers, which I'm happy to have two computers here. But anyway, go back into the lie spotting and give a little recap of what you went over for the listeners that are just joining us and me.
Well, you can catch a lot of it if you check out Pamela Myers' How to Spot a Lie TEDx talk. It was really, really well done. And she shows, you know, a satisfying amount of footage to make you feel like you can be a pro. And there's some other really good, I actually ended up getting, downloading an ebook on it too. This guy, what's his name? It's not Eckhart. It's something like that though. But they seem to be, I think they've been developing this as a branch of study for like at least the last 10 years. And obviously one of the prime areas of interest is in law enforcement. All right. So
catching them lying or for them to catch other people lying?
For them to, like, you know, break down stories from suspects and stuff to not just determine are they lying or not, or are they not lying, but to give them clues as to, you know, what to look into in an investigation and stuff. So you got to say a criminal who's telling you a really fabulous story about how they couldn't possibly have done it. And if you can pick up all of these signals for where they're lying to you, then that's the area that they would then go to investigate, right? And just tips you off on what things. It's amazing how much stuff can be right in front of you and you don't see it. And that's one of the first points she makes, is that you can't lie to somebody who's unwilling to let you do it. Like, it's a cooperative act. So, and, you know, con men and stuff like that, some of the most infamous ones, I can't remember the name of this one guy. There's only one known picture of the guy, and he pretty much could have taken down the entire Western banking system. But he said that everybody wants to be sold something, right? Everybody's willing to give you something. And that's essentially when somebody lies and gets away with it, it's because they've said something you want to hear. So your best defense is to figure out what you want, right? What it is that you want them to give you, be it some sort of esteem, money, power in some way. If they're selling you something and it's not real and you go and you buy it, you don't figure out that it's a lie or a con, that they've essentially just played into one of your weaknesses, right?
Yeah, well, using the different lie detection techniques has been something that cops have done for quite a long time. My old fishing buddy back downstate, he was a cop. He spent a number of years in the detective bureau, and not only they do go with like the facial gestures and the voice tone and stuff like that, but being like a regular city cop, most of what he deals with in order to, you know, figure out somebody is lying is most of the criminals come up with really, really stupid answers, really stupid excuses. And he'll be the first to tell you cops aren't geniuses. You know, criminals are just really stupid. And one particular one that I always get a kick out of was a guy broke into a sporting goods store. It was a little local sporting goods store. Been there for years and years and years. I mean, since I was a little kid and probably before that. And, He threw all the swag that he got out of there into this this garbage can, but it was like one of the dumpsters, or not a dumpster, but it was a large garbage can. The garbage truck would come along, and it would hook onto it, and then pour the stuff in there like they would a dumpster, but it's, you know, personal size, I guess you would be a good description for it. Well, anyway, Numb Nugget decides that he's going to go and put all the swag into this little garbage can, and they follow the tracks through the snow all the way from the store back to his place, and they find the garbage can there, and well, lo and behold, you know, they find the stuff too, and he tried to deny it and everything. They're like holding all the stuff up and, you know, showing him the tracks and everything. So he went down.
He forgot about snow.
Well, like I said, most cops are not geniuses. It's just most of these criminals are really, really stupid.
That's nuts. But I don't know. That is essentially what I think governments are doing with people, too. And people want to believe that society can be stable and safe, and that they can put their faith into somebody else to take care of them, right? And
yes. That is
the
appeal.
The lie.
Yeah, that's the appeal to unicorns fallacy. And we'll be back after this trip to the market.
Whee! Right.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
Are you sick of government lackeys who say you didn't build that? Are you tired of elitists like Barack Obama and Al Gore taking credit for the web while trying to take over the web? Are you disgusted by experts whose concept of the internet is that it's a series of tubes? Take back the free market of computing by encouraging software developers to adopt the BIPCOT NoGov license. The BIPCOT NoGov license allows any use or modification except by governments. Go to BIPCOT.org. That's Bravo, India, Papa, Charlie, Oscar, Tango.org.
Oh, yeah.
We're back.
Yes, we are. We are back. So, when we left, you were talking about politicians being lying scumbags and everything else. But something that you had mentioned earlier is that in order for a lie to be successful, there must be a willing participant. Go, Diana, go.
Well, that's the thing with politics. I mean, if you look at the amount of apathy people have towards politicians and people who are being asked to vote for, especially in, you know, the modern times, all their campaigns are not about what they can do for you. They're about how bad somebody else is. And, you know, we really want to have some positive feelings. There's been a fair bit of kickback trying to get farm their campaigns and actually try to sell us these things that we want from them, right? And that's really all they're doing, is just selling us this idea that they can create a stable, peaceful world, a utopia, if you just vote for them, right? And you'd sent me a link to a video about socialism, which I think, you know, we can connect this pretty well to lie spotting here. This was a woman going on about five ways in which the world we live in is already socialist. And the premise being that a lot of politicians like to throw out the word, they're a socialist, as if it's some sort of a terrible thing, right? So this is the socialist governments trying to solidify why it is that you should vote for socialism. And the fact is that you're already living in a socialist environment. People just don't want to admit it or something. And she had some pretty sketchy ways of going about trying to sell this viewpoint. Yeah.
Yeah. It's full of fallacies in there. And the gal that's doing it, and I don't have the video up. I think her name is Francesca or something. It's on AJ Plus, and that's the YouTube. And we'll throw a link to that as well as the lie spotting video in the show notes. But she's pretty good at diagnosing some problems. And there's a lot of politicians that are out there. You know, all the main candidates that are running for central planner here in the USSA are really good at diagnosing problems, but they're pretty poor and miserable when it comes to diagnosing the cause of the problems and prescribing a cure. So essentially they can accurately tell you that you have a broken leg, but their reason for you having a broken leg is because you read too much, and the cure is drink chicken soup and rub tomato juice all over it. And it's really ridiculous, because there's a lot of how could I put it, she jumps to some conclusions that they're just abjectly false, and assumes that correlation equals causation. One of the things that she talked about was how the New Deal ended the Great Depression, and how it was so great for Americans. She points out that it's socialistic, you know, socialistic security, the unemployment benefits and different welfare programs. And if you look at reality, the Great Depression didn't end in America until, what was it, 1946? And by that time, most of the New Deal stuff that Roosevelt had implemented had already been ruled unconstitutional and canceled by the Supreme Court.
Well, I don't actually have a problem with her premise that there's a lot of socialist aspects to our current culture, but she presents it as if that's why it's great. Yeah,
right.
And the political conversation, if you want to call it that, is a question between, you know, how much the government should be involved in people's lives, like, you know, the laissez-faire, right? Now, this is, you know, for people who believe in having a government in the first place, right? It's always been a battle between left and right in terms of, if you have a government, should they be deeply involved in, you know, the equality and the happiness of people's lives, or should they be very standoffish and let people negotiate their own paths and, you know, have a free market and so on. So that there is some socialist aspects to the government doesn't say anything about what makes it good or not good. It's just a reality that socialists have always been a part of the political battle. And that's one of the things under negotiation at all times between the right and the left.
Well, what she gets absolutely correct is number four in the video, war. War is socialistic because everybody's forced to pay for it, and it's controlled by government and everything else. And Right. She does talk about all the socialistic stuff like it's a good thing. Well, war is not a good thing. Killing your possible trading partners is not good for the economy. Taking the best and brightest out of a society and having them mowed down by machine gun fire and bombs and rockets and everything else, no, that's not good for the economy. So there's, you know.
Well, what struck me with the war argument was that she says, well, war is funded by people's taxes. Therefore, it's a collective thing that we're doing. And then she implies, therefore, it's good.
Yeah.
That was an unsaid implication in this argument. Well, war is funded by the people, so we're in a socialist environment. And her whole premise is that that means good.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's definitely socialistic because you can't opt out of it. It's mandatory. It's compulsory. Even the forced servitude of the draft. Yeah, you know, I mean, there once was a time where involuntary servitude was called slavery, but there's always an exception for war, just like, you know, when everything else gets thrown out.
Well, let's go back, though, to her first point, and this is part of the lie. This is part of selling it to you. The very first thing she says that's socialist is weekends. You get weekends. You're not forced to work more than 40 hours a week. You have labor laws, right, that give you not just, you know, the ability to refuse to work more than 40 hours, but she's selling it on the idea of weekends, which is what most people look forward to all week. Therefore, weekends, fun time, equals socialism. That's extremely clever.
Yeah, and that's completely nonsense, because it implies that big business would want everybody to work 24 hours per day. Now, I'm sure that big business, any business owners, big business or small business, would love to be able to operate 24 hours a day and have the same people working all that time. The question is, how productive is a person after 8 hours?
Well, that's the thing, is they wouldn't want to. And actually, like in Canada, I don't know what it's like in the States, but they don't have to give you coffee breaks anymore. When I first started working, I don't want to say what year that was, but I started working when I was 14, and they actually had to give you coffee breaks. They had to give you a break pretty much every 2 hours. Nowadays, it's an option. It's something that they do if they're a polite employer. But the reality is, when you don't, especially if you're working in a job that's really demanding, if you don't take a break every 2 hours, your mind isn't working as sharply. Right. And courteous, that's what they call it. It's a courtesy. And it's like, yeah, well, if you don't give the break, it shows you're not courteous, for one, in terms of, you know, arguing with employers that don't want to do that. But it's stupid for them not to, because they're just not going to have the productivity that I think really clever employers do treat their employees really well, because they know that it gives them results back from the employees as well.
Right. How common do you find it for employers to not give the coffee break? Is it common? Is it rare?
Well, nowadays, I mean, employment conditions are getting really harsh, and they don't even want to give you, when they call it a full-time job, but they don't give you full-time hours. They give you just enough hours for you to get by, but not enough for you to feel secure. I have no idea why. This is like the new management training. They are actually being trained to keep employees on edge and to keep them in almost a state of desperation, it seems. It makes no sense whatsoever, because you don't get the loyalty from your employees in return.
Right. Well, what a lot of management will do is they'll get into this mindset of, we have to keep hours down, we have to keep hours down. And they will actually hire more people to keep hours down, or they'll actually expend more hours to reduce hours. I saw this when I worked at UPS. They would always say, all right, you know, send people home, do this, that, and the other thing. And rather than having a full crew and getting done early, they would have a shorter crew, take longer, and it would be messier. And I saw this, and this was a common theme, at least in my building. And I imagine it was probably company-wide that this idea would go around. But ultimately, you would wind up sacrificing the quality of service in order to increase the productivity or pieces per hour. And it's not just UPS. I'm not just picking on them. There's a lot of companies that do that. They'll freak out over a couple minutes of overtime, but they'll go and blow, you know, $20,000 on decorations for a promotion or something like that. So, yeah, it's kind of ridiculous.
But I mean, as far as not giving people breaks, you know, like you said, if people don't get a break every couple hours, then their mind is going to turn to mush. And quite frankly, most people are going to find a way to screw around one way or another during that time. They will get a break whether you give it to them or not.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's her starting point in there. Is she doesn't start out with serious issues. She starts out talking about weekends. You all like your weekends, right? That means you're a socialist. And then point number two is some really cool famous people are socialists.
Ah, appeal to authority.
Exactly. And you want to be like these really cool famous people, don't you? So that means you're a socialist. This is like, it's a classic setup for getting people to agree for all the wrong reasons based on, like, it's lie spotting, man. I caught her. I'm good at this.
Well, going back to what I said about the cops and the criminals, it's not that cops are geniuses, it's that the criminals are really stupid. So it's not that, non-socialists are geniuses, it's that socialists are really, 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 really stupid.
But it is a classic trick, though. I mean, that's why they get celebrities to sell products and so on, because there's a huge amount of the population that if they see a famous person doing something or promoting an idea or wearing a watch or whatever, then they need to have that, right? You know, that's me mm-hmm. too, which is really sad.
Yep, that's me too. Go down with the ship. Ideology. So what else did she mention in there? One of the things that I heard, she talked about corporate welfare, and she talked about that like it's a good thing too, you know, the bailouts, the stimulus and everything else. And quite frankly, those things were reviled by everybody. And I don't think
seems like an attempt to try and convert people who are typically conservative voters or Republicans, convert them to being a little bit fond of socialism too by claiming that, you know, the big companies that get bailed out, you're a capitalist, you like big companies, well, we bail them out too, socialists, we're awesome.
Mm-hmm. Well, something that's really ridiculous about this is she implies that it's necessary for government to throw money into these projects. You know, the stimulus fallacy, that government can actually stimulate the economy and it creates a net good.
With Michael Dean and his weird friends, yeah. Tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
Are you sick of peaceful people being locked away for victimless crimes? Instead of trying to get out of jury duty, consider taking it so you can do the right thing. A single juror with a conscience can send someone home to their family instead of to a jail cell. If there's no victim, how can there be a crime? And if the judge or prosecutor are keeping you in the dark, what are they trying to hide? You can vote your conscience instead of being a pawn of the state. For more information, Google jury nullification or check out the Fully Informed Jury Association at fija.org.
Worms. So, Diana, you had something that you want to add to the socialism is great and America's socialistic and we love socialism video.
You don't even have to like it because you already are. That's the hard sell, right?
Yeah. And
so, well, the point number three, because we covered the other ones mainly, but point number three is, you know, socialism pays for the amenities that you enjoy, like libraries and roads. And every time you go to work, you're enjoying the benefits of socialism, right? The way I'm saying that just sounds so creepy.
Yeah, so I mean, it's basically, what about the roads? And I am so glad that you are repulsed by that. That shows that you are of good character. Yeah, this idea that libraries would not exist if not for government and roads and all this sort of stuff, I mean, it's absolute hogwash. I mean, back in the
essentially, what they're saying is that if you want to disagree with ideas behind socialism, you have to stop using the roads. You know, that without socialism, roads would never have been built or anything. But like, for you to disagree with them means that you have to stop actually living your life in a normal way, because they're going to connect everything in your life to socialism. Therefore, you can't actually do anything without supporting what they've accomplished, apparently, for you. Right?
Ugh. You know that the only reason I drive on the roads is because I'll get shot in the face if I drive on the grass. Yeah. Well, in early America, the libraries were actually people, you know, rich people would have their own private libraries and they would loan out books to people. So, I mean, this wasn't a government operation. And in fact, if you look at the road building in early America, both before and after ratification of the Constitution, the roads that were being built were done privately. It was private turnpike companies that were doing these things, and they were laying down tens of miles of roads for every like 2 or 3 feet that government roads, road builders were doing. So this idea that it would not exist without government is absolute nonsense. I mean, it's historically wrong. It's completely ignorant, and it's appeal to unicorns.
Well, it's almost like if an individual was to go around and donate $5 to every community project, then they could say, well, none of this would exist and, you know, without me. It's, you can insert yourself into everything that you think people are going to find some value in order to claim, you know, that it's only because of you that it took place. But in reality, I think like a lot of these things that have ended up being funded by governments that were in place at the time, it's really just, you know, an assumption that they wouldn't have happened had the government not existed. There's no proof that, like, that's one of the problems, I think, is that, you know, there's been no anarchist society that people can really look at and say, and look what they accomplished, right? So they act as if nothing would be accomplished without government, which is just bad logic.
Well, you could actually look at anarchistic societies, because modern day Somalia is anarchistic and they still have roads. They have an international airport. And since the collapse of the government, the death toll has dropped unbelievably. Life expectancy has increased. Literacy has gone up. Access to health care, clean water, and all this other stuff that is considered something that only government can guarantee has all increased. So if you look at the measures of success, everything has gone up there. And that's not just a bunch of anarchists saying it. That's the World Bank even did a study on that. And it's not like the World Bank is some anti-government ANCAPistan mouthpiece. And their whole purpose is that, and they are government. They should be justified in government. And for them to say, hey, you know what? Now that it's no longer a socialist state, now that it's becoming anarcho-capitalist, things are improving. And there must be a reason for that. But anyway,
must go invade them to make sure nobody finds out.
Yeah. Second hour coming up after this trip to the market and get some news. Probably nothing but Somalia in there, though.
Worms.
Worms!
Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. Basic Handgun and Rifle with Jared Waltz.
First rule of being alive is you own yourself.
A groundbreaking approach to firearms and self-defense training. Beautifully filmed and easy to understand instructions make this one a must-have. Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. New DVD from Michael W. Dean, available on Amazon.
Your house is in progress.
Yeah.
Trigger warning. This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting through the Libertarian Reeducation Center's Low Orbit Ion Cannon, high atop Financial Beast Plaza on the artificial satellite LibPAR 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. We are back.
Pipcot, yo.
Yo.
Welcome back to the Freedom Fiends. Hour number two. Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no-gov license. This allows reuse by anyone except the government. Learn more at BIPCOT.org. Welcome back, Lou. What have we been talking about here? We've got a whole hour talking about spotting lies and why socialists are lying.
We're talking about spotting socialism.
The masses.
Hey, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
I hear you.
Okay. All right. All right. So, yeah, we were talking about socials. One of the things that was interesting going back, and I really want to get off of that because it's triggering me. She talked about socialism as being defined as everybody owning the means of production. So here's my idea. We don't actually work at the restaurant, but since we own it, let's go down there and have a big old party for all of our friends and enjoy our food. Now, I'm thinking steak, lobster, shrimp, bacon, lots of bacon, all that other good stuff. How's that sound?
Well, she actually gave a really specific definition of what socialism is. Let me just see, because I wrote it all down here. She says that it is political and economic theory of social organization that advocates means of production, distribution, and exchange should be owned or regulated by the community as a whole. Right? So that's
right.
Her
so
definition.
So let's go to our restaurant and eat all the food because it's ours. Never mind that we don't
work
there.
It should be, right? So it's, right. That's really saying, well, it's not already owned. But that's the weird thing is that her definition, I guess it's a fair enough definition, but this idea that it should be is the argument that's going on. Mm-hmm. And then she goes on to assume that it already is owned by us. And she says, and these are all the reasons why you should believe me. Right?
Mm-hmm. And how do you think it would work out if it was owned by everybody and we went to our restaurant and ate all the food?
Yeah, there'd be a few arguments about rights.
Yeah, it'd be
like, I have the right to eat my food.
No, it's our food.
I was in a really interesting situation, actually. It just happened today in terms of rights. I became, I believe, the world's first frogs' rights activist. I'm engaged in an argument over frogs' rights.
Okay, do tell. I have to hear this. I didn't deal with anything.
It's even weirder.
Yeah, I didn't deal with anything this silly lately, so... Anyway, go ahead.
I like doing silly things. So what makes it even weirder is that this came about because there was a video on YouTube that was challenging Stefan Molyneux and Stefan Molyneux's followers. And it was an attempt to ridicule some sort of claim about rights that Molyneux had made. Now, of all the people, like I'm definitely not the one who's going to go in and defend Stefan Molyneux, right? I've got two fairly lengthy videos explaining why I have no interest in defending Molyneux and his silliness. And I didn't even watch the video that this was responding to because, you know, Molyneux, who wants to listen to Molyneux? but in this thing, he was talking about rights, which I am interested in because I do, I'm doing more and more videos on the freedom of speech, and which is under so much threat right now. It's crazy. But, looking into freedoms and rights and so on, you'll come across this expression of negative rights and positive rights. So negative rights sounds like a bad thing, but it's actually the best thing. These are essentially, civil rights, the founding rights. And they are things, they're negative because they intend to keep other people from interfering in your life, right? So they're in the pursuit of liberty. So you have the, you know, the right to speak and to not be silenced. You have, you know, freedom of thought. You, your mind tends to just think things. Sometimes you don't even like what it's thinking, but you should have, you know, it's just something that happens, and therefore you should have the freedom of exploring your own mind and its thoughts, right? So these are things that, these negative rights are the most important ones, because essentially they're not asking anybody like a state to come in and interfere. And then you have things which are essentially all human rights are positive rights, where they say we need a state because people aren't nice to each other, and we need a state to mediate and so on. And these are things like somebody who's operating a bed and breakfast must allow you to come in, even if they're against homosexuality, you know, in their religion, they can't discriminate against you, or they can't fire you because they don't like working with women, right? Things like this, which never made sense to me, because in the pursuit of happiness in your life, you should try to surround yourself with people that you get along with, that you work well with, right? So if your employer is somebody who's sexist or racist, are they really the person you want to be working with, right? But human rights were designed basically so that other people could say, I want this job and this person doesn't want to give it to me, make them give me this job. Does that make sense?
as an effective strategy of ordering society, it makes no sense at all, but for how it actually works, oh yeah, it makes perfect sense. Right. I'm entitled to everything.
Yeah, but civil rights, the foundational Magna Carta style civil rights, are essentially designed to allow people who happen to live in a society that has authoritarian style leaders, or they have a tendency towards authoritarianism, or control over the lives of the people who live under them, that those rights are designed to prevent them from interfering in your daily life. So hence their negative rights, stay out, right? And so the question came up in this video, are these rights, are any of these rights objective in terms of you can look at a creature and just by objective observation determine that they have certain rights? And I was like, well, okay, a frog is not a plant. So it moves, it should have the right to freedom of movement, right? And, you know, there are things that you can tell about creatures just by looking at them. They require access to air, they require access to water, things like this, right? And so they should have the right to pursue those things. And the response came back, oh, I knew somebody would say that. And he's like, those are biological needs, they're not rights. And I was like, no. It's like the right to pursuit of happiness. People interpret that like that means you have a right to be happy, but it doesn't. It means you have the right to pursue it, right? So you shouldn't be punished for pursuing it. So the right is not that you absolutely have to get air and water and happiness and things like that, but that you shouldn't be punished when you're trying to obtain those things. You with me?
I'm with you.
Right. So I think frogs have rights like that. But then the difference, you know, I was saying to him, it's absurd to compare frogs and people because they don't function in the same type of society. So you don't, like, frogs don't have memory. So if you have two frogs sitting there and one fly, one of the frogs gets the fly. They don't have a discussion about whether or not they should split it in half with a knife and share it. Right? And additionally,
they also don't have a Bible to split the fly in half.
Yeah.
Continue.
And additionally, Joe Frog doesn't remember, you know, Fred Frog eating his fly on Tuesday and then hold a grudge against him. Right? Like they don't have a memory long enough to remember that they didn't get the fly. They just kind of go, you know, stick their tongue out and then they're looking for the next fly. And they've totally forgotten that Fred got the fly. So they don't encounter the same kinds of conflicts that people do. That's one of the big things about humans that makes us stand out, is that we have this short-term and long-term memory. So we have a sense of having been hard done by, having lost something. We remember that Fred got something we wanted, whereas a frog doesn't do this. And so they don't have the same issues in terms of rights. But also that rights apply in members of the same species. So if a lion eats a person, we don't say, well, the lion violated the human's right to live, right? You're only concerned with whether a human violates that right to live.
If a lion was eating me, I'd be pretty concerned with him violating my right to live.
Yeah,
no,
but
I don't think that I wouldn't say that it was out of malice. I would say it's just being a lion. That's what lions do, is they eat things.
But it's a fun discussion in breaking down rights and where do they come from? What's driving this? Even why are we even having a conversation about rights? But because he chose frogs, I, you know, somehow or another, I'm a frogs rights activist now. I don't even know how it happened.
Here's the question. Does the frog have a right to go to the water on your property? Does he have an inherent right?
Well, that's one of the questions that I brought up, is like the Society of Frogs. Do they have frogs that own the lily pond and
no, I'm talking about your property.
Pads?
I'm talking about your property.
Well, that's where the rights conversation gets really tricky with, you know, with our society, because then you're dealing with where do your rights end and somebody else's begin, or do your rights trample on the rights of somebody else, right? So I think to start with, this discussion of objective rights instead of subjective rights is trying to break it down to, can we find some core things that have no subjectivity to them, which is an interesting question. And
yeah, I think a lot of these conversations are crazy, and there could be absolutely no resolution to them. It's like a Rubik's Cube on steroids. There's no solution to it.
Hey, I'm on steroids.
I think here comes the frog. But anyway, it's literally trying to figure out how many anarchists you can balance on the head of a pin.
28.
And because all these so-called rights are subjective, everything is always subject to the interpretation of the interpreters, just like the Constitution, just like the Bible, just like any possible thing, because people are going to go by what they know, and they're also going to go by their belief system. So,
definitely Freedom Fiends, subjectivity in there.
Freedom Fiends come back right after this trip to the lily pad.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof.
Are you tired of governments murdering people around the world? Stop using their money. There is an alternative. Bitcoin is a stateless free market non-political currency. Bitcoin cannot be inflated or controlled by any government. By using their money, you are helping the state. Stop doing it. You have an incredible alternative available now. Learn it, use it, spread it. Get started with Bitcoin at Bitcoin.com. That's Bitcoin.com.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
Ribbit. Yeah. Freedom Fiends. Hey.
Protecting frogs all over the world.
At least you have something.
Kermit has an announcement. Go, Kermit, go.
Oh, no. Save Kermit
from. This is Furries, or the Fiend Phone Unnecessary Random Reeducation Interruption Exigency System. Hi, I'm Michael Dean, the CEO and CAO, Chief Anarchy Officer of Freedom Fiends. We're 48 hours into our raise money for our telethon to raise money for transmitters for somewhere. So far, we've bought 2 transmitters. We would like to buy 2 more. So go to freedomfiends.com, click on the Bitcoin link over in the top right. Send us Bitcoin, or if you need a PayPal address, post comment, post email, or get you the PayPal address. You are helping bridge the gap of places that LRN and Freedom Fiends are not on the radio, but we are going to be on the radio in those places. All right, carry on. Have a good froggy time.
Broadcasting the freedom signal all over the world into the night sky.
Smearing our soul under the veil of the infinite.
Diana, right, back to the froggies. Go ahead and talk for a minute or so. Yeah, go ahead and talk for a minute or so because I want to send some money to, I want to contribute. So
cool.
Well done. Setting a fine example.
Send me a $2 donation.
While arguing for froggy rights and stuff, or questioning whether or not they exist, and you know, it came to mind as I was listening to people discussing rights. They go, "Well, your rights aren't being violated." Take freedom of speech for a specific example. If it's not the government directly silencing you, so if it wasn't the government, if it was just some other authoritarian body, as we have much of lately, we've got the social justice warriors on Twitter that have taken the law into their own hands. They actually go into courtrooms and say, yeah, I actually feel justified with vigilante justice because, you know, the courts can't deal with this, so we're going to deal with it ourselves. So we're actually living not just under a government right now that enforces laws, but we're living with a vigilante government that is, encroaching upon things like freedom of speech as well. And the argument against those people saying, hey, that's my freedom of speech, is that, well, it wasn't the government that did it. And so then you think, well, I think, if you have an anarchist society with no government body, no official silencing body, you're going to have that happen anyways, as you do with social justice warriors. People get together in groups and then they exercise power games over each other and so on. So do you have rights? Like, do civil rights exist in a society without a government?
Well, let's look at a couple of the thoughts that you posed there. When you have government being the vigilante and imposing things on people, there's one thing that government has that, let's say, a social justice warrior group does not have, and that is a $15,000 indoctrination program telling you just how legitimate the government is. And it is actually the belief in government, or the state as we call it, the religion that legitimizes the existence of governments and states, that enables government to be able to impose these viewpoints on people. So realistically, I think in an anarchist society, you wouldn't have government forcing people to bake cakes and provide or take pictures at gay weddings. But by the same token, you also wouldn't have government preventing people from having gay weddings. So it's...
The social justice mobs on mm-hmm. social media, they actually go about spreading somebody's name around so that anybody who can do so will contact their employers and tell them, like, and they threaten with advertisement against employers. You know, we're going to tell all your advertisers not to, put ads on your channel or your on your media site. They influence people quite drastically. And in some cases, they have accused people of being sexual molesters of children or of having raped somebody, and it was a false story, and the person has been killed by vigilante warriors, some of whom go to jail in the cases that have hit the news. But you know, if they don't reach the point of actually killing somebody, literally killing them, but they kill them socially, nothing usually gets done about it. So there are oppressive groups that act like a government.
All right, so under the current situation, nothing is being done about it, and you're concerned that that won't change?
I'm concerned that we're aware that it happens without government.
Okay, we'll pick this up when we get back from this trip to the market.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. but they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
Ribbit. Frogs are people too.
Old Michael Dean had a farm. E-I-E-I-O. So anyway, yeah, before we went to break, we were talking about civil rights in a stateless society. And Diana, you posed a couple of situations, couple scenarios that currently exist under the stateless regime. And it sounds like they haven't been resolved as of right now.
Well, essentially what it is it's, yeah, like, I don't know if I'd call them anarchists, but they're people saying the state isn't good enough. We've formed our own, you know, jury, judge, executioners, and they're going about basically socially destroying people. And I think that brings up questions like remove the government, because they pretty much have. They've said the government isn't good enough. And they've got a vigilante mindset. And I think vigilanteism is, you know, pretty historic. I think that's a tendency. People love to see other people punished. You know, they would have hangings in the square and so on, and people would party around it. They'd make a big event, right?
There's a lot of false information about vigilanteism, a lot of false history. Now, granted, there is a lot of it being violent and indiscriminate, but if you look at the Old West, and I'm going to reference an article, it's called The Not-So-Wild Wild West. Just Google it. It's on Mises.org, and it talks about justice in the frontier West, and it talks about that there was absolutely no government, or in some places there was very little government, and they didn't have police and courts and all this other stuff. What they had were vigilance committees, and if you look at the root of the word vigilante, it's vigilant. You know, when people say you have to remain vigilant against oppressive government, that's vigilante. But anyway, what would happen is if there was actual cattle rustling, and by the way, crime was extremely rare in the frontier. 50 to 1900, there were fewer than 12 documented bank robberies west of the Mississippi during the time. Fewer than 12. And when the guy wrote the article in 1995, in his hometown of Dayton, Ohio, there were more than 12 bank robberies just in Dayton. So, but anyway, when you have a stateless society, one of the comments from somebody that was out in the frontier prior to government infesting everything was, you know, back before the government and the courts and everything else, we had very little crime. And then the judges and lawyers came in, and that's when the crime really ramped up. And what you have is, in a situation like that, there's absolutely no prohibition against defending yourself and your property. Something that we discussed a couple nights ago was, do you have the right to defend property, you know, by law? And the answer is no. You can't use lethal force or violence to defend property, and that's a prohibition that has been set down by government. And in the places where you have that prohibition, you have an awful lot more property crime. So the fact that murders and everything else were pretty rare, and what they would do is they would gather the vigilance committees to go out after cattle rustlers and murderers on these rare occasions. And because they want actual justice, they want to get the property back, or they want to punish the person that committed the murder, they're not going to go grab up somebody willy-nilly off the street, you know, because they're under pressure to close cases because the politicians are hooting and hollering at the chief of police. So if they get the wrong guy, then that means that the person that actually did it, the one that's supposed to, you know, pay his debt to society, so to speak, or pay his debt to the aggrieved party, which is more realistic, that person is going to get away scot-free if they grab the wrong guy. So you have actual incentive to capture the proper person.
There's some really good information in there. I love the etymology of, like, you know, vigilante with vigilance, because I think, like, for me, that's one of the really big things in terms of governing bodies, be they official governments or be they just, you know, elevated status people who are considered to be wise leaders of the community, right? And there's, those always exist. We'll always have leaders and followers. But the vigilance and having the ability to question people who have any sense of authority about them is one of the key elements to keeping some sort of balance in a community. And but, you know, going back to lie spotting, I guess, one of the things with women, they go on about how they're so powerless in society, and yet they have all these phrases that, you know, really put that to shame. The man is the head of the house and the woman is the neck who turns it. And women's power is very covert power. And the types of things that, that you can see in the social justice communities and so on is this back channel type of gossip level. Like, it used to be one of the biggest crimes to falsely accuse somebody, to smear the name of somebody in society. It was a very heavy penalty to do so. And that's not so much important nowadays. Now you can go and say whatever you want about people and defame them and gossip. And
well, let's take a look at that. Actually, no, you can't defame them because you do have the slander and libel laws. And this is something that Walter Block has pointed out. I don't always agree with Walter Block, but if you look at his book, Defending the Undefendable, he really nails down a lot of points. The fact is, because of the slander and libel laws, people have a tendency to believe that false information is true without any sort of facts to back them up. Because obviously, if somebody was spreading falsehoods, then, you know, the courts would step in and deal with them. So
You have to show that they did it intentionally. If they can reasonably claim that they believed it to be true when they said it, then they're not guilty.
Yeah, but going back to the old West, where the guy says, you know, until the judges and courts and cops showed up, we didn't have much crime. There's this assumption that the courts are going to sort all this stuff out. And yes, you have to prove malice and you have to do all this other stuff. If you take out all the legalities, it makes it a lot easier to get justice. And I don't think that people would have a tendency to just outright believe somebody spreading rumors, if there weren't these laws in the subconscious thinking of, well, if they said something that was a lie and malicious, then they could be dragged into court.
True enough. Yeah. But when the law exists to punish, you figure that if they haven't been punished by it, then they must be innocent.
Yeah. And the bottom line is statism hasn't stopped this from happening. So if statelessness doesn't stop it, it's not a knock against statelessness. Mm-hmm. Because,
well, I think these are the questions.
There's something. Yeah. Well, but the thing is, there are things that are never going to be solved. There's problems that there's never going to be an answer for. People are still going to get hit by lightning. People are still going to drown. Children are still going to die of cancer. All right. Mm-hmm. This stuff isn't going to go away.
There's no utopia.
So if you minimize...
But like I ask these questions, like sounding very concerned about it, but not because I think that, but because I know that's the concerns that people who can't support anarchy in their mind, they can't wrap their head around how it could work. These are the serious things that they think about. They think, well, you know, who's going to stop somebody from hurting me? Who's going to stop somebody from, you know, from slandering me? And like, what do we do? Do we have rights? These are the questions on their mind that, you know, I don't think there's enough time and attention put into, you know, really making a picture for people of what it would look like without the government there to do that for you.
But the question is, who's going to stop it now? And I think I said this Monday night, cop worshiping state assessment says, you know, you won't be talking bad about cops if you spend a half hour on the south side of Chicago. You'll be begging for a cop. Really? I thought cops are supposed to keep us safe and stop crime. So if cops keep us safe and stop crime, then I should be able to spend all the time I want on the south side of Chicago because they're keeping us safe and stopping crime. So, I mean, it's really, it's a lot of nonsensical circle, you know what word I want to throw in there, thinking.
Yeah, so. Well... And the same thing with, like, you know, prohibition, I guess, right? The cops were there to make sure that people weren't drinking booze, but, you know, the trade just
how'd
goes
that
underground.
Work out? Yeah,
how'd that work out for them?
Yeah. Now, people say, well, how would statelessness deal with substance abuse and drug addiction? Well, how has the state dealt with it? You know, are they doing a bang up job? If they're doing a bang up job, then the stateless society will do the same thing. But they're not doing the same thing. And we could spend another two shows talking about how the prohibition laws have made substance abuse actually much worse. But hey, let's jump over to Is It Real or Is It The Onion? Now, you've never played this game before, right, Diana?
I'm a lie spotter, so I'm going to catch you.
Okay. All right.
But no, I've never played it.
Okay. Here are the rules. I will read off a headline to you, and you will tell me if it's real or if it's satire. And
it's getting harder to tell nowadays.
Yeah. A little tip is I didn't use anything from The Onion for the satire articles tonight.
Okay.
So first one, and this one might be kind of easy. Kentucky clerk Kim Davis converted to Islam while in prison.
Kentucky who?
Kentucky clerk Kim Davis converted to Islam while in prison.
A clerk? Just a clerk could be anything, like a salesperson.
Oh, you're not up on this cluster bleep.
No.
Oh, yeah. This is a Kentucky clerk that refused to issue marriage licenses to same-sex couples after the Supreme Court ruled that they couldn't be discriminated against. And she refused to do it. She refused to give out these licenses even after the Supreme Court said that, because she's a Christian who's on her fourth marriage.
And okay, on her fourth marriage. I'm going to say she converted to Islam.
Yeah, well, anyway, she got sent to jail over her religious convictions. But anyway,
I'm going to say that's true. That happened.
Okay. All right. In this particular case, this is satire.
Aw.
So, and this is from nationalreview.net.
But I wanted Islam to save her soul so badly.
Sporting a drastically different appearance than she presented only 6 days ago, Davis, her hair now in cornrows, shocked a crowd of supporters with her first public statement since the arrest. "I have come to accept Islam as my guiding religion," said Davis from outside the jailhouse. "My cellmate and now good friend, Denise Tyson, and her crew showed me compassion during my difficult incarceration." Displaying a small teardrop tattoo under her right eye, Davis explained that although Christ came into her life only 4.5 years ago, it only took 5 days of hard time for her to understand that radically different religions can oppose the same things equally and with the same fervor.
Well, it seemed, now that you've finished it, I was like, I'd get suspicious as you're giving too much detail. You're over-explaining.
Well, the whole point about the game is you have to figure it out from the headline. Okay, let's go to the next one. Barbershop fined for refusing to cut woman's hair.
That's true.
Hey, we'll talk about that and give the answer when we come back from this trip to the market.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum. Wake up and smell the freedom. One of the easiest things you can do to help Liberty is to torrent Freedom Fiends episodes to help keep them drone-proof. You can set up your home computer to download and share Freedom Fiends archives over BitTorrent. You can even set up scheduling so it only shares while you're asleep or at work. Put your unused computing power to work and help keep the Freedom Fiends around well into the future. Simply go to freedomfiends.com and click on the Torrent Club link and learn how to torrent and share Freedom Fiends archives.
Freedom Fiends. Ribbit, ribbit. So back to question two, and is it real or is it the onion? And the question is, barbershop fined for refusing to cut woman's hair. And Diana, you think it's true?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I read that story actually in the real news source.
It is true. It comes from CBS Pittsburgh. A woman went into a barbershop and wanted to get a haircut. They said, "No, we're a barbershop. We don't do that here." And she went and complained to some government agency, and the barbershop got fined $750 for refusing to cut the woman's hair. So apparently if you give government money, it makes up for her getting her feels hurt. But anyway, here's the part that really made me nauseous. The owner, John Interval, says, "I didn't really consider it so much a discrimination thing as it's a barbershop for guys." He says that he wasn't aware that he was legally compelled to service both men and women, but he plans on paying the fine because he respects the law. Blech. Michael, this would be a good time for you to start coughing again. Yeah. So
that's crazy. Right, like, I was under the impression you could refuse to sell something to a customer at your discretion in a store. And wouldn't that apply to services as well?
Yeah. Well, the thing is, for taking care of women's hair, you know, doing the proper styling, I mean, unless she wants a fade, they don't have the equipment for it. So it's, yeah, I have no idea what she's getting all butthurt over. But anyway, so next up, cop gives man ticket for broken windshield in parking lot of auto glass repair shop.
No, I think that's The Onion.
No, that's true. That's from Countercurrent News.
Well, don't you have to be driving your vehicle to be guilty of a crime with it?
When a city needs revenue, you're always guilty. Okay.
Well, actually, if you park your car too long and without moving it, then you can get in trouble too. I found that one out.
Yep. Okay, last one. Trump. I always felt that I was in the military at military school.
Well, okay. Yeah, I could see him. Well, it doesn't sound like it's crazy enough for Trump to have said it. He's usually a little more obnoxious when he says things.
Yeah, it is true. It's from Yahoo Politics. And he says that his experience at New York Military Academy felt like military training. So
makes total sense. Yeah. It just seems like, as far as Trump quotes go, that was pretty mild.
Right. You would expect him to say that, well, yeah, I was Army Special Forces at the military high school. But anyway, so, yeah, Michael wanted me to explain boiling frogs to you. Now, you've never heard this before.
No, I've never heard of the boiling frogs meme.
Okay.
Is it a meme?
Okay. It's been turned into a meme, but the concept is that, and it's kind of like socialism, because socialism is usually imposed incrementally. You don't have, outside of like the Bolshevik Revolution, you don't have, you know, announcement, okay, everybody's a socialist now, and they start pointing guns at you. They slowly draw the gun out of the holster over a matter of years, and eventually that's when you have the gun pointed at you. But anyway, boiling frogs is, the concept is, if you take a frog and throw it in a pot of boiling water, he's going to jump out immediately because it's so hot, and you know, he knows that he has to get out of there. But if you put him into a pot with, you know, room temperature water, and then turn on the heat, it will slowly boil. He won't notice that it's incrementally getting warmer, and therefore he'll just stay in there, and boom, he's boiling. So kind of like the incremental introduction of socialism.
Well, kind of like what is that, you know, stupid bird that will drown in a rainstorm? Because they just look up at the sky like, what's coming out of the sky? And then all the rain goes in their mouth and they drown.
I have no idea. I've never heard of that.
It's not a chicken. I think it's a turkey. Is it something about a turkey? I'll have to look it up now. But yeah, it's apparently some animals do things like that. But I'm out there to protect them, just like the froggy in the boiling water. I'm there for you, dude.
Frog rights.
You got rights.
FRAs.
Yeah, you got. Someone's got to care about the frogs. That's me. That's who I am.
Hey, how do you feel about Kermit having a younger, skinnier new girlfriend than Miss Piggy?
Does he? It's about time. She was a really annoying creature. She was not a very pleasant pig.
Release the hate mail. Well, thanks for being on here tonight, Diana. It's always a pleasure.
That's fun. I know.
And for more Freedom Fiends, go to freedomfiends.com.
You guys are the greatest thing since sliced cops.
Oh, Michael.
I had to come at the end and do that, didn't I?
Ribbit.